Welcome to the Deep End by On Deck, a podcast where visionary builders, creators, and thinkers discuss world-changing stories and ideas. I'm your host, Marshall Kozloff.
So what are technologies that can ensure that our planet is not going to self-destruct, we're not going to destroy ourselves with climate change? What are technologies that will allow us to expand beyond the Earth and discover, maybe there are other civilizations out there or other places that we can inhabit and so on? And then what are technologies that can further the idea of peace for all and the idea that everybody should have their sense of almost self-ownership and liberty and ability to live their life as they please.
On Deck is where ambitious people worldwide go to start companies, find their next roles, and invest in their careers. The Deep End invites the founders, operators, and investors from the On Deck community and beyond to turn their experiences into the ideas others need to start their own odysseys. Joining me in the Deep End this week are Ian Cinnamon and Lucas Bagno. Ian and Lucas are the co-hosts of Village Global's Solarpunk podcast, which focuses on space, technology, and defense. The theme of the conversation today is solarpunk. I thought it was interesting that although they say they're inspired by the aesthetic of solarpunk, Ian and Lucas emphasize that they have their own interpretation of what solarpunk means, but isn't necessarily tied to the online solarpunk community. Instead, for them, it's about technology as a force for progress and human thriving over the long term. Beyond the definition of solarpunk, we discuss a wide range of topics, including how there is more capital and talent flowing into space tech today than ever before, why time is short for defense innovation and the need to act now to address the changing geopolitical situation, why the CCP represents one of the biggest threats that America has ever faced, and why Lucas considers Anduril to be the most inspiring company name of all time. Our discussion today is an intriguing mashup of disparate topics like space, defense tech, and ideas that matter the most for a better, more secure, and more sustainable future for humanity. Let's dive in. Lucas Bagno and Ian Cinnamon, welcome to The Deep End.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, I seriously want to shout this out to listeners as much as possible. They have the coolest podcast art in the game, in this like tech, venture capital, broad, multi-cinematic universe. Just really incredible. So I wanted to talk with you not merely about your design skills, but also frankly about the topic area. So with Solarpunk, you're focused on technology, space, and defense. How did the two of you get engaged in those spaces as investors?
It's a great question. I would say that we at Village Global have always invested in those sectors for a long time. We were investors in companies like Hadrian, First Resonance, Epsilon 3, Titan, a bunch of others. So I think it has always been an area of interest. And, you know, I think Ian and I personally have always been passionate about those sectors. I mean, since I was a kid, my first memories are going to a planetarium with my grandfather. And I think space to me has always been aspirational. And it has always been an area that I wanted to spend time on. So I think at the end of the day, it's just we saw the opportunity for the podcast to, you know, capture an area and sector that we're both passionate about that we didn't see a lot of people covering. And that's, you know, from an investment perspective, that's something that we've always done quite a bit here at Village.
And I was very lucky to get into the space, actually, initially not as an investor, but as a founder. So the quick backstory there is I founded a company called Synapse Technology, and we were applying artificial intelligence and computer vision to the x-ray machines at physical security checkpoints that you'll see at airports and courthouses and the like. And I was incredibly lucky to have Village Global as my first institutional investor. And this was in the early days of Village Global as well. So as Lucas lists all the great companies we've invested in, I'll give a plug. Synapse was in there as well in the early days. And being a founder in that space, there is such an amazing kind of mission-driven mentality that you and your entire company has to have. And as part of that, you end up learning so much about this sector of dual-use technology, about how do you actually apply technology to solving real critical problems that will further the support, not just of our country, but the entire world and the human species as a whole. And something that you realize when you're going through it is it can often be very lonely. There's only a handful of companies that are actually building in that space. There's only a handful of investors that will even invest in that space just because it requires a different expertise and a different area of focus. And when Lucas and I came together to start the Solarpunk series with the mentality of how do we apply technology to move to a more prosperous and promising future of our planet and of our world, I thought it was such an amazing and unique moment where we could bring all of these great minds together and further encourage more entrepreneurs to go into this type of space.
And I want to ask you to a question that came to mind during Miami Tech Week, which I believe we were all at. So at a presentation you had, I think actually Chris from Hadrian specifically talk about how I want to focus on real problems. He made the joke about how we didn't all come here to start working on advertising and the whole crowd cheered. Now, if you've, you know, read the literature in quotation marks, you just know that 10, 12 years ago, this whole idea of 140 characters and not flying cars was not controversial, maybe, but was different, was edgy. Now we're in an era of everyone cheering when they hear some version of that. So I think the question to you two, as people who are surveying this space, but also investing, what's next, right? So now we all agree that focusing on these critical problems is important, but how do we take that narrative shift from that narrative and the crowd cheering to something tangible and real?
So I would actually push back there. I don't know if we all agree that solving these problems are critical. I think there's absolutely more people working to solve them. I think there's more investors looking to back companies like that. But I would say as a whole, while the crowd at Miami Tech Week might have been more excited about solving some of these critical issues and deep tech and dual-use technology and so on, I would say the space as a whole, I don't know if it's really fundamentally changed all that much. I think there's more venture dollars flowing into the space, and as such, there's going to be more dollars flowing into dual-use technology. There's going to be more dollars flowing into space companies and so on. But I would also argue there's probably more money flowing into advertising companies. There's more money flowing into crypto and Web3 companies, into consumer, into influencer-type companies, and so on. And I actually don't think there's anything wrong with founding a company in that space and going deep there and solving core problems in those areas. And I think they all have their merits. I don't think everybody should be going out tomorrow and going and founding a dual-use technology company just because that's the most important thing right now. It really depends on what I like to call kind of the founder market fit. Lucas, would love your perspective on that as well, of course.
No, I agree with everything you said. You know, to answer Marshall's question of what should people do if they're excited about this and what's next, I think the plot for the next 5 to 10 years is going to be to continue to grow this flywheel. You know, I think we have more people interested in the space than ever before, more capital flowing into these spaces than ever before, more companies getting started into the spaces than ever before. And we need more, all of it. You know, we need more founders, we need more engineers, we need more ICs, we need more investors, and we need to make the case of why this matters. And I think that at the end of the day, like to Ian's point, like I have nothing against people that are, you know, doing other projects and starting companies in other spaces. I do think that particularly when it comes to space and defense, the timeline is actually pretty short. And we don't have 10 years to just sit around and do whatever we want and pretend that, you know, the geopolitical context is not changing. So I think it's up to all of us to, you know, grow that flywheel and make the case of not only why this matters, but why we have to act now.
Guys, this is so exciting. In a year of podcasting with On Deck, there has never been a "I disagree" ever. So Ian, that's actually, just as a person who works in the news and politics space, that's just actually exciting. And I really appreciate the pushback. I was like, wow, first time. So no, like, that's great. And this is exactly why I booked the two of you. So Lucas, let's just answer the question then. Maybe it feels obvious that this stuff matters, but to Ian's point, that is an exaggeration. clearly, as a non-expert in the space. So why does this matter specifically? So people get that space matters. I think people get that deep tech matters, but why does it matter through your context?
Yeah, let me unpack the question into two different, let's unpack aerospace and defense into the actual two different industries that they are. From why space matters, I think there is the old JFK question of, you know, it's just aspirational, we got to do hard things, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, to Elon's point, at some point, you know, even like if you love the human race and you want mankind to continue, at some point, you know, our planet is going to die, be it because the sun is expanding or because we get hit by an asteroid or get hit by something. You know, if you want mankind to thrive through the long term, you want space. Like you must see the space industry as something important. And you know, we need to dedicate resources there. You know, it's not 10% of our GDP, it's not 50% of our GDP, but it's more than what we have today, which is a tiny, tiny sliver. So I think that's why space is really important. And you can also make a lot of money there, as Zelian said on the podcast that we did together. Why defense matters is a different question. And I think it's a geopolitical question. And listen, I'm an immigrant to this country. I'm not American, but, you know, I fully bought the whole American dream thing. My whole family and I moved here, and we fully believe that America is a great force for the world, and we want the American experiment to continue to thrive. And if that's what you want, then I think you need to look back in what has happened over the last 10 to 20 years and, you know, America's importance and force in the global context. And I think the situation that we're in right now is not great. You know, I think the threat from the Chinese Communist Party is probably the biggest threat that America has ever faced. And I'll back the statement by saying, you know, if you look in the last 200 years, China is actually the only country that has hit more than 60% of America's GDP in the world. That has never happened before. And it's not just the fact that their economy is thriving. You know, there's an argument that that is a great thing, and they've lifted hundreds of millions of people out of poverty, and that should be celebrated. But the problem is, they have a very clear plan for world domination and for expanding political political influence across continents. And they're already doing that. They've been doing that for the last 20, 30 years. And at some point, that is going to clash with our model. And if we believe in freedom, if we believe in human rights, if we believe in constitutional rights, at some point, that model is going to clash. And we need to be prepared for that. And the best way to increase deterrence, the best way to make sure that we don't have an actual war, is to make sure that we actually have the defense mechanisms and the defense systems and the defense companies that are prepared to protect us from that threat.
I think, Lucas, that's 100% spot on. The way that I think about this space is, it's, yes, there's space and defense. But I think that there's a lot of other sectors that have a fairly large impact on the idea of kind of furthering our planet and our society and Western values and so on. So on one element that actually Lucas and I have not yet had the chance to really have some guests on the podcast for example, like biotechnology, therapeutics, and so on, right? There's a lot of companies that are pushing forward some amazing research there that I would argue, you know, if we're able to solve cancer as a human race, right? Like, that is a massive game changer for our ability to move forward as a species. And I would say that is as critical as figuring out how can we send humans to Mars and beyond. In the same vein, another lens that I look at this through is if you take, for example, a advertising-based company. Like, take Google, for example. Google, you know what, I think it's some crazy, or Alphabet, the parent company, 99% of the revenue, I think, comes from Google, which is the advertising business. However, so much amazing work has been done to refine their advertising algorithms to be able to generate and create such a, like, cash-generating machine. A lot of that work actually stems from Google being one of the leaders and artificial intelligence, natural language processing, sentiment analysis, and so on. And a lot of their expertise that they've developed to unlock this massive advertising market that we might all kind of look at and say, ugh, another advertising company, all of the research that they've done to unlock that advertising revenue, a lot of it's now actually been published in papers or turned to publications from Google Brain or other amazing organizations like that, that have then been used by, for example, my prior company, Synapse, to develop computer vision algorithms for that were actually used for dual use purposes. So it's really hard, in my opinion, to look at any of these in isolation, because I think by the very nature of a lot of these companies just pushing forward on technology, they end up resulting in byproducts that hopefully result in pushing society and the world forward. Now, of course, personally, if you're asking me, Ian, are you more excited in investing in a, an app for TikTok influencers versus a company that's doing asteroid mining? You know, yes, I'm probably going to be a little bit more excited about the asteroid mining company, just because of when you think about the future, that is kind of how one would define it. But at the same time, that TikTok influencer app may very well be putting out byproducts that further other elements of deep tech, artificial intelligence, or other core elements for the future of our country and nation.
If I could add something to that real quick, Ian, I completely agree. And I think the whole, you know, let's bash on, you know, the ad industry or whatever industry because they're an important. I think that's just a meme at this point, and it's just frankly not that interesting. You know, the ad industry, even though it has gotten a terrible brand over the last 10 years, is actually incredibly responsible for the success of small business throughout the country. What I do think is really important, and I think this is something that Trey Stevens mentioned to us in our podcast together, is a lot of people, you know, they see industries that they see as evil, and they just say, I'm not going to work there. However, like if you look at it as a spectrum between what is morally good and what's morally evil, there's actually this huge chunk in the middle that is just things that are pretty neutral and it can be somewhat inconsequential. And, you know, I think that's probably like 50% plus of things. And I think at the end of the day, people oftentimes make an active choice to not work in something that they consider to be morally evil, but they don't really think about things that are morally neutral. And they don't make an active choice to do things that they consider to actually be a really positive force for the world.
There's an obvious thing I should have done, which is let's just get a definition of solarpunk.
Great question. As Lucas and I have learned, there's a lot of different definitions of solarpunk. The way that we view solarpunk, to be very, very clear here, is we see it as any technology that is furthering the human species and our planet to become a more prosperous, safe, environmentally friendly world. So what are technologies that can ensure that our planet is not going to self-destruct? We're not going to destroy ourselves with climate change. What are technologies that will allow us to expand beyond the Earth and discover, maybe there are other civilizations out there or other places that we can inhabit and so on? And then what are technologies that can further the idea of peace for all, and the idea that everybody should have their sense of almost self-ownership and liberty and ability to live their life as they please. Lucas would be very curious to hear kind of what I missed there, if there are nuances, but that's at least how I've thought about it.
No, I think that's great. And I would say solarpunk, when we just came across it, we just saw it as the opposite of cyberpunk, which is this very technocratic view of the future, but technology is actually kind of a bad thing. And what Ian and I were trying to do with the podcast was to actually create a perception that, you know, technology is great. Technology and humankind are going to be a positive force for the world, and space and defense are a part of that. You know, I don't think we're necessarily interested in engaging with the whole solarpunk community and a bunch of internet niches that came out of that. You know, like if you just look at the punk space, like there's just 100 different variations of that. And I don't think that's particularly interesting. I think why we picked it as a name is, I think there's a few characteristics of a great name. It sounds cool. It has a meaning that relates to what you're trying to say. And it's also not necessarily that well known. And Ian and I use as a base example of that, the name Andro, which is one of Ian and I's favorite companies. And I think it's the single best name of all time. So I'll ask you this, Marshall. Do you know what the name Andro actually means?
Because of the various weird internet spaces I spend time in, I do know the answer to this question. It is it's a sword from Lord of the Rings. I forget which character it was, though.
No, so here's the most interesting part. You're right. It is the Aragorn sword from the Lord of the Rings. But Anduril, which is a company that is trying to revitalize America's industrial base and defense industry, the name Anduril in the Lord of the Rings actually means the Flame of the West, which I think is the most inspiring name of all time. So they kind of hit all those three things. It sounds pretty cool. Nobody really knows what it means. But once actually you look it up, you're like, holy crap. Like, I totally get it now. And that's a little bit of what we tried to do when we picked Solarpunk.
Lucas, I'm just going to point out there that I actually think Solarpunk is the most inspiring name of all time, not Anduril. Sorry to our friends over there, but I'll leave it at that.
I just appreciate how Lucas out-niched me. I was like, I've got you. It's Aragorn's sword. You're like, well, actually, it's this. So I'm getting disagreed with. I'm getting out-niched. Like, this is a winning podcast. To your point, Lucas, you hinted at the existence of a solar punk community, and I don't want to get into the niche, like solar punk means this, but I think the thing that is interesting in that debate, so for example, when you guys launched the podcast, I saw a bunch of folks like tweet out saying, hey, like, what the heck? Like, they're talking about defense and like tech, and you search solar punk on YouTube and you'll find some like very crunchy, very like socialistic, like quasi-communistic kind of vibes there. And once again, not expecting you to respond to like those specific differences there, because you've made clear you're interpreting something. But there's a tension that I think is helpful, but people are basically getting at, which is solarpunk in both of your versions is about hope and it's about the future. Thinking of defense and thinking of geopolitics in the way that you are doing it just feels like a total harsh point on that future. It's hard to think of a healthy, productive future if we're also thinking about great power conflict the way you two think about it, especially talking about on the podcast. So could you speak to that tension of like, we have these very 19th and 20th century problems while also talking about tech?
Yeah, for sure. I'll leave the political aspect of it a little bit to the side. Anybody that knows me probably knows how I think about these things. But to address the point of like, okay, there is this view of solarpunk that is a very peaceful thing, very green and all of these things. Like, how does defense and space relate to that? And I would say that conflict that I think is a false dichotomy is exactly why we picked solarpunk as a name. And I think what Ian and I were trying to do is just say, hey, if we want to get to that future, like if we really believe in those things, if we really believe that this solarpunk future is a good thing, actually space and defense is not a path to get there. Like, it is 100% part of the path to get there. And we absolutely need those industries. We need those companies so that we can have that future that we all want. And this idea, and this is what I'll say, like, I completely reject, is this notion that, you know, well, we don't need to care about what our enemies do, or, you know, we don't really need to worry about what the CCP, how the CCP is growing and expanding for us in the world. I would love for us to have the privilege to not care. But if we actually want to live in that future, if we believe that humanity is a force for good, if we believe in democracy, if we believe in freedom, then we actually need to care about space and defense, because there's a lot of people out there that don't care about any of these things. So the only possible path for us to get to that future is to actually build those industries, to have those conversations, and to be realistic about where we stand in the world relative to our competitors.
Completely agree with that, Lucas. And I would say for anybody who is questioning about the solarpunk name or has used it in other capacities before, I actually love that. And I love the fact that people care about creating a planet that is more prosperous and peaceful and green and technologically forward and so on. I think that's incredible. And I would almost ask anybody that's been deep in that space, listen to the podcast that we put out and let us know what you think about that. Because I think if you really listen carefully to any of the guests that we've had on the show, every single person's goal is the exact same here. It's how do we move the human race forward? How do we move society forward? How do we ensure peace on Earth? And I think that's absolutely critical. To give one example of, I think, Heather, there's often misunderstandings in this space is if you take, for example, nuclear energy, obviously something that's been hotly contested, especially with, you know, the Russian atrocities that are currently occurring in Ukraine. But the idea of nuclear is something that has been shot down over the last many, many, many years by people who claim to want a greener world and a greener future, et cetera. But if you actually look at the science and the numbers behind it, it's actually far better than many other forms of energy. Yet it's completely ignored just because there happens to be a bad reputation with it, or there's kind of a loud vocal minority pushing it down. So I would say one of the core tenets that Lucas and I always think about when it comes to solarpunk and the guests that we have on the show is let's really focus not on hearsay or prior reputation or whatever it may be, but let's really focus on the science and the data and the math behind it and really understand these technologies that we talk about, these founders that we meet, these investors that we meet. How are they really trying to push the world forward without any preconceived notions?
I'm glad you made a reference to guests because I want to talk about that for a second. So I'd say your first few guests for the podcast are excellent guests, but if you know the space you're in, they're pretty straightforward. Catherine Boyle, she's been on this podcast. Trey Stevens, Dalian, also been on the podcast. Mike Maples. But then you brought on Martin Gurry, who is the author of The Revolt of the Public. Easily, he published this on his own, then it was republished under Stripe Press. Easily one of the best made books I've ever gotten, just in the sense of the color scheme, the design. Just cannot recommend it. But the ideas are important too. But if you're into aesthetics, huge win for the folks at Stripe Press there. How did he and his ideas of this revolt of the public fit into the story that you're telling as a podcast, aside from just the investors and the founders you'd had on before?
So I'm glad that you listened to that podcast. I think that was one of the favorite episodes that Lucas and I have done by far. The way that we think about it is all of it is tied together incredibly tightly, right? So sure, you might have different groups of people. You might have former CIA analysts like Martin. You might have founders who are building companies, investors who are investing in companies. But the thing that ties everybody together is everybody is really, their expertise lies in understanding how the world has reacted to new developments and new technologies, right? Martin talked extensively about social media and how that's totally changed the dynamic and drew parallels to the printing press way back when. And I think if you really look at it from the lens of how do each and every one of these guests think from their own perspective, from their own personal experiences, what they've gone through, what they've technology they've analyzed or pushed forward, et cetera, how does that lead to a prosperous and safer world? Really all of the characteristics of solarpunk, everybody's going to have a slightly different lens, but everyone seems to be driving in that consistent direction. I would say as well, as we think about future guests on the show and some of the episodes that we haven't yet released but are looking forward to releasing soon, we love the idea of really talking to anybody who wants to push forward a more prosperous and safer world, a world where humans are able to explore the galaxy and so on. It doesn't just have to be technology founders. It doesn't have to just be technology investors.
Yeah. The one thing I would add to that, and let us take us back 60, 70 years to the moon landing. Not only that is one of the most aspirational moments that we've ever had as a country and as a human species, for us to be able to get there, we need will, we need people, we need state capacity, we need institutions. And those are all related to, you know, the broader topic of space and defense. And when we think about where we've been in the last 20 years, with this, you know, sentiment of decay, decadence in America, but in the West broadly, Ian and I always want to make sure that we cover that topic as well of like, how did we get here? Like what happened in the last 30 plus years, ever since, you know, America's values were unquestioned. And now, you know, we're in this weird phase. And people talk about a, you know, changing world order, so in this vast sentiment of increasing nihilism in America and in the West. So at the end of the day, like that, I see those as being directly related to the topic of space and defense. If we want to get the next generation to really have the will and the power to build these companies, we need to understand how we got here and how all of these sentiments are related to America and to the West broadly.
I could not agree more with that. I would say that, Lucas, to your point there, if we want to start pushing forward on this technological advancement now, I think you're right. We need that will. I think if we don't do it now and we sit around and wait, I think the world is going to evolve in ways that force us to have that will. But I think the worry is it'll be essentially too late for a lot of that, right? As climate change rages on, as there's more and more conflicts with governments like the CCP or now Russia, et cetera, what a lot of people don't realize is that need for that will is actually happening now and starting to be forced upon us, but I don't think it'll be broadly recognized for several years. So part of the goal of the podcast is help make people aware that now is the time to start caring about a lot of this.
Something that I really, really appreciate and why I'm unironically a listener of your podcast, not just because of the like On Deck Village relationship, is you two are very interested in ideas, and an idea that was very in vogue, but clearly in the way you're talking, isn't quite as relevant to your work as this idea that technology and the internet would make terms like the West, the nation state, et cetera, just be less relevant. You know, you read like the sovereign individual, you read a lot of the stuff that like Balaji Srinivasan talks about. There's this idea that you're just going to have newer structures matter less than legacy ones. Because once again, there's another tension here. There's no perfect answer, but can you just speak to that tension?
So I think it's a great point. And I think that whenever there's innovation in the world, there's always going to be some sense of tension and resistance and not wanting change, right? I think that's by far just the nature of humankind, right? We all get comfortable. We don't really like change. We don't want things to be different than they were. I think if we think back in time, one of the funniest elements of this is back in Facebook, or now Meta's heyday, every time the user interface would change, I don't know if you remember this, there'd be like the only thing that you'd see for like a whole week, honestly, being posted on that platform was, oh, I'm going to leave Facebook because the UI changed. They moved the messenger button one button over, right? It was ridiculous.
It was crazy. Like, look, I remember this era. It was crazy. When you're in high school and that happened, I have to interrupt just because that's such a great image, because you remember that. You're like, that felt like everything.
And it's like, how could they do that to us? It's like, I know where to click. How could they update the user interface? And I mean, let alone like the newsfeed algorithm and all that, my God. But I just think that's such a great example of such a minor change that really doesn't matter, right? Like, it's all good. It's not going to change anything. Yet the uproar was incredible. So now imagine the change if we're saying, hey, we need to fundamentally change where our country's energy supply is coming from. Or, hey, we need to fundamentally rethink how we're going to apply technology to government. Or another great example of this is take Google, for example, right? We talked about them earlier in the advertising capacity. If you remember, I think it was 2017, 2018. I might be slightly off here. There was massive outcry from their employees when Google started participating in Project Maven and some other government programs. When you think about it, like, that's a sense of change, right? It's, I joined Google because I wanted to work at a company that was optimizing selling ads or building an internet infrastructure, whatever it may be. And now I'm not even working on the Maven project, but my colleagues that I've never met in this giant organization happen to be working on it. And I don't like that change. I don't want that. Like, that tension is just so visceral and so real. And I think the nature of social media, the nature of kind of our oversharing world where every moment is shared and discussed, and Twitter can at times be a very toxic place, also a great place, but a toxic place at times, people tend to become more and more polarizing. And it seems like it's very hard in today's day and age to find really a middle ground. And we end up resulting in, by the very nature of it, anytime even something so minor like a UI change on a social media app happens, it becomes this very polarizing, tension-filled world. So I would, just to go back to your question, right? Like, I think the nature of where society is going is anytime there's anything that's new or different or change, it's going to create this strong, strong tension, which makes me sad because it makes it harder for people and great minds to come together and get to moving society forward where we can agree on something and try to push the ball forward.
Lucas, something I'm curious about, what's been an insight, not just like a fact that you've picked up from surveying the space, but what's just an insight you've gained from the podcast so far that you think would be useful for listeners?
The more that we talk to people, I keep coming back to this thing that I said at the beginning, which is that we don't have time. And it can be, you know, if you look at all the people that we've had on the show, and if you look at all the people that Ian and I spend time with in the industry, you know, it's kind of what Trey Stevens says, like everybody kind of suffers from the crazy uncle problem. Because everybody's thinking about all of these issues related to national security, related to space and defense all day, that you tend to be obsessing over and thinking over all the things that could go wrong and everything, all the issues that we have today. But I think at the end of the day, the core takeaway from all the guests, from all the conversations we've had, is still the fact that if you care about these issues, or even if you care about your own quality of life, and you want another American century, we need to be working on these issues now. And we don't have the privilege to wait 5 years, 10 years, and just get to work on these issues later. We are already pretty far behind on some of these topics. So the core takeaway is really the pressing, how pressing these topics are, and how much we need to be thinking about and working in those and getting even more people to come work on those.
Lucas, I completely agree there. I would actually, I think the sense of urgency is absolutely one of the major takeaways. I would say another takeaway that I've personally had is this idea that there's a lot of different ways to get involved, right? It's not like, oh, wow, you know, I believe that we need to be doing a lot right now to move the world forward and be able to explore the galaxy, create peace, etc. Therefore, I'm going to go start a space company. There's a lot one can do without going that far. And honestly, the idea of saying, oh, I might not have expertise, but I'm going to go start a space company might not be a good thing. It creates a little bit more noise and maybe doesn't help. And to be honest, I think one of my takeaways has been there's so many different ways to get involved and help without going straight into the I'm going to start a deep tech company. One great example here is one of our guests, I'm blanking on which one it was. I think it might've been Martin Gurry. It might've been somebody else. Talked about when you go on TikTok right now, for example, and you're in China, after certain hours, the only thing that you're going to see are science videos or math videos or things in that realm. Whereas if you're not there, if you're in the US, for example, you're going to see whatever viral video is popular, and it'll kind of suck you into this like TikTok vortex for hours and hours. And the reason I give that example is, let's say you are a engineer, or product manager, or designer, or a salesperson at one of these consumer social companies. That could be something you work on. You could say, okay, how do we push the world forward in a way where we are going to modify the algorithm to further certain types of content and hours that will try to make people not so sucked into this platform and make it where they want to explore the world more, things in that realm. I think the other side of that coin, though, is if you're somebody who is interested in founding one of these dual use companies, a company that's really both supporting the commercial and the government side, it's not easy. And there's a lot of ingrained knowledge that a lot of these founders in the space have learned and earned kind of access to over years and years and years before they're able to start a company in that space. So it's a challenge. And I think every founder and every investor that we've talked to has spoken to the fact that starting things in this space, well, yes, we want more people to do it. It's not easy. It's incredibly challenging. There's a lot of things that our government can be doing, that in general Western governments could be doing, that people for adopting technologies can be doing to make it a lot easier. And all of that needs to happen. It's not just about saying everybody should be a founder and everybody should go found a company funded by the DoD.
Yeah, I just want to double click on that point real quick, because I think what Ian said is something that I think him and I want to cover on the show. Maybe we've not done quite as great of a job there, but really demystifying this idea that if you want to work on these issues, you either need to be an aerospace engineer, a rocket engineer, or you need to come from SpaceX. And those two are great traits to have, but you absolutely do not need to have had only those type of experiences to be able to make a contribution to this space. If you're a software engineer, if you have an operations background, if you do FP&A, turns out these companies need all of those skill sets. And you can come and you can work in these industries and you can make an impact. And you can pick up on all the knowledge necessary that is, you know, very idiosyncratic to the industry. But I think this is, you know, demystifying this whole thing is one of the main barriers that this space has had to deal with over the last 10 years.
And on top of that, thinking about at your current company, without even switching companies or moving to one of these companies, how can you push the ball forward still, right? So if you're at Google right now working on ad tech products, what can you be doing in your current job that thinks about how do we make sure we're living in an incredible world that you want to be in 50, 100, 200 years?
I want to get to something as we're nearing the end that Ian, you brought up, which is the example of TikTok and the overnight hours, positive educational content. Like as you two both know, that's the result of state top-down control, right? You know, social media companies in China are much more tightly regulated in a way that left, right, or center, not to get political on a, you know, tech podcast, most people in the US wouldn't be comfortable with. But I think what you're getting at, though, is this idea that there can be objectives that are good, aka education, advancement. Why is a, you know, 14-year-old up at, you know, 1 a.m. watching TikTok videos? So, you know, there's something there to what you're saying. How do you two think that free societies, how do they coalesce around like positive objectives without that ability to just be top-down and aggressive? We can't dictate, hey, Facebook PM, Meta PM, you're going to make this better. But I think we want to live in a world where someone listens to your podcast and they say, hey, maybe that could be interesting and go somewhere. But how would you two answer that question?
So I would say there's a difference between a free world where people could do what they want to do and private corporations making decisions to engineer their products in certain ways. So I 100% agree with you, right? If we're talking about, for example, if the US government were to say, after the hours of 7 p.m. Monday through Friday, we're going to shut down all of the like Steam gaming servers so nobody could play video games. Way overstepping. But if Steam as a company said, hey, one of our core values is now going to be education or math or science or something else, and we are choosing as a private company to say, you know what? We're actually going to shut down certain servers of certain games where we've noticed that there's addictive behavior. There's certain things going on here that aren't great. We're going to shut that down at a certain hour and leave other servers up. And that's our choice as a private company. If you as a game developer don't like that, no problem. Go to a different platform. Or in your example, if you're a product manager at Facebook, for example, why not propose a new sprint or a new project that says something where maybe there's a little banner on the screen that says after 9 p.m., hey, watch this cool science video or go on Reels and go watch this, right? That's not, in my opinion, that's not imposing too much of a top-down control or anything in that realm. All it's doing is letting a private company come up with different values and focus their values in different ways.
I will say slightly stronger version of that, although I agree with everything that Ian just said. I'll break it up into two things. The first one is, even though I completely disavow this idea that top-down control is good, and I think the CCP and its model of government is horrendous. When the Greatest Generation in America fought World War II, GM completely changed its business to support the country. And their tagline at the time and for the decades since then, for a long time, was victory is our business. And all of these companies were able to change their models to support the national interest. What has happened ever since the end of the Cold War is that we decoupled this idea that foreign policy and national interests in the economy should go hand in hand. And what we've had since then is, you know, corporations, influential people, rich businessmen completely disavow the notion that capitalism should be a force for good and that they have a responsibility for where they put their money in. And this notion that capitalism is immoral and business is immoral and, you know, business is business is something that I think we're going to have a very strong reckoning on over the next 5 to 10 years. I mean, we're in the venture industry. We know that there's a lot of people in the venture industry that have gone out of their way to fund American competitors to essentially put us in a very weak position and to actually further sustain the interests of governments that are currently committing genocide. And, you know, this might be controversial now, but I think within a few years, it's going to be pretty clear that those people have blood on their hands. So realistically, to answer directly your question, Marshall, everybody has a responsibility to stand by the values of the country that they live in, of the model of government that they defend, and to espouse those values in their business, in their communities, in those practices. And that used to be obvious to a lot of people. And I think over the last 40 years, ever since the end of the Cold War, we lost that. And we need to bring back that idea.
And to go just, Lucas, I love that, to look at it from a potentially even less controversial lens, hopefully. If you completely remove politics, remove a sense of country, remove anything from that whatsoever, and you state a fact and say, I believe that we should try to make our emerging generation, children who are in school or in college, whatever it may be, smarter. We want to make everybody more intelligent and smarter and give them access to more STEM programs, whatever it may be. And if you just state that as a whole and say, forget what country I'm in, that's my goal, right? Like, I'm all for the CCP imposing within China that they want their generation to be smarter, because I think the more smart people we have on the planet, the better. It's not like I want Americans to be smarter and different countries to not be. Like, I think everyone should be as smart as we can and give them all great education and great content. So if you look at it from that lens and you just say, look, I'm a PM at one of these companies, or I'm a designer at one of these companies, I want to propose a project to help make anyone on our platform smarter and more intelligent, and remove politics from it as a whole. Hopefully that's a less controversial way of thinking about, hey, what kind of product should we be building? How do we want to push the ball forward here? What do we want to do to really support our users, not just in the behavior that's going to get them addicted to watching more ads on our platform, but to make our users love our product in the long, long, long term?
On that less controversial note, that is an excellent place to add. But this has been really great, and I cannot recommend Village Global's Solarpunk enough. I think something you all have done to end on a note of praise is there's a lot of tech podcasts out there, but there are not enough tech podcasts that look at the world through a venture lens that are centered around ideas. And I think the two of you have really captured that really well. So once again, cannot recommend that enough to the audience.
Thank you, Marshall.
Marshall, thank you so much for taking the time. And I'll say, in addition to hopefully Solarpunk being great, at Village Global, we love backing founders and entrepreneurs who are interested, not just in kind of what we talk about at Solarpunk, but anything, because we think any business, any sector, at the end of the day, if it's pushing the world forward in the right direction, will support the future growth of the world.
Thanks for joining us in the deep end.
If you enjoyed your stay, give us a review on Apple Podcasts and share this episode with your friends and colleagues to help grow the show with us. We've also got show notes and more episodes available at ideas.beyonddeck.com. See you next time.